Senate Republicans have raised the stakes in the tax debate, saying their new tax cut plan will now likely include a repeal of the individual mandate under Obamacare, the rule that requires all Americans to have health insurance coverage or pay a penalty. Supporters of the idea, including President Donald Trump, say repealing the individual mandate would reduce the number of people who currently receive federal health subsidies, freeing up as much as $300 billion they say could go toward a tax cut for the middle class.
Leonardo da Vinci's Salvador Mundi, a 500-year-old painting of Jesus, going under the hammer in New York on Wednesday for a record-smashing $450 million after fees, four times over its pre-sale estimate, and more than double the old mark for any work of art at auction.
The question of Brexit, what it does to the economy in particular, which is what we think about what it does to inflation, is altogether more complex and more uncertain. And these effects, to me, are certainly far too complex to justify any simple assertion that Brexit means lower interest rates. They're too complex and too uncertain even to say, well, Brexit means lower growth and therefore lower interest rates. Given the potential effects on supply, I don't think even that is true.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's November 16th, 5:10 in the morning. Glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell, another business day getting underway. We've got a great broadcast for you today. It's Thought Leader Thursday. Doug Myers is going to be here. We're going to be talking more about the Equifax breach and what banks are doing to sort of shore up security in the wake of what is the most massive and most wide-sweeping breach of all of our personal information to date. And a little bit later in the program, get out your toy box at Chicago Toy and Game Week, and we will be talking with the founder of Chi-Tag, Mary Cousin, will be here on the business of play and the business of toys. But first, we have some news to report this morning, and the markets from the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures up 58 points right now. NASDAQ futures are up about 26. S&P futures are higher by about 9. Around the globe, the Nikkei is up about 1.5%, 322 points. The Hang Seng is up about 0.5%, 167 points. And in Europe this morning, markets are generally higher as well, with the FTSE in London up just a fraction. The DAX, though, is up about 0.5%, 74 points. Same story with the CAC in France, up about 0.5%, 34 points. Oil is at $55.28 a barrel this morning, which is down just a few pennies. A couple of big stories. Republicans are muscling their massive tax bill through the House, with President Trump urging them on to critically needed legislative victory, and GOP House leaders exuding confidence that they have the votes to move forward. But the tax overhaul has hit a roadblock and could be possibly a big roadblock. Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, a Republican, became the first senator to oppose from his party the must-do legislation. And there is inkling that several more, maybe as many as two more, are getting ready to say the same, that they're going to vote no on this. The senators need 50 votes to pass. If they lose one or two, it would be a tie, and the vice president would cast the tie-breaking vote. But if they lose three or more, the tax package is in serious trouble. We'll continue monitoring that throughout the morning. Mexico, the United States, and Canada have started a fifth round of talks on renegotiating the North American Free Trade Agreement. None of the three countries' trade representatives or economy secretaries will directly attend the talks, which will formally open Friday and run through Tuesday. The U.S. Trade Representative's office says that 30 groups of lower-level negotiations are also meeting in Mexico City this week to try to save the North American Free Trade Agreement. And Richard Cordray, the director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and an appointee of former President Obama, has resigned from that post. Cordray plans to leave the office at the end of November, expected to return home to Ohio to run for governor. He was the first confirmed head of the independent agency established by Dodd-Frank, the landmark banking law created after the 2008 economic crisis designed to prevent future meltdowns. It's Thought Leader Thursday. We're going to be talking a little bit about the Equifax breach and security at your bank. And Doug Myers is here this morning. He's an SVP, Private Banking Regional Manager at Associated Bank. Doug, good morning and welcome back to the opening bell.
Thank you, Steve. Good to be here. Thank you.
The Equifax breach is still on a lot of people's minds, still weighing heavily. It seems like it's out of the headlines now. But how are you and the folks at Associated Bank dealing with this and other advisors dealing with this behind the scenes?
Well, it's a huge issue. And banks obviously have a fiduciary responsibility to their clients to protect their data, as do other asset managers and other companies and other banks as well. And it's been a huge issue because we have found that anybody can go in and sit in a parking lot and collect data from a department store customers and bank customers and investment house customers, and it's a very scary issue. And I know banks are spending millions and millions of dollars on technology to enhance the security, as are department stores and other financial institutions. And, you know, we seem to put protections in place, and all of a sudden there's another hack, like an Equifax, as you talk about. And that, the Equifax issue was a big one, and it would hit personally to many, many millions of people because of the fact it was such personal data, not just credit card information, but credit information generally. And that's a scary thought. And so I think it's been hard for financial institutions, an example, to keep up with all the technology concerns. Banks are spending, we're spending millions of dollars. I know the bigger banks are spending billions of dollars on technology. And as banking continues to migrate to the apps and to the mobile world, technology becomes, and technology security becomes even more important to the consumer.
I'm trying to follow nationally some trends on this. I saw an interesting story in the Wall Street Journal recently about surveyed a couple of different wealth advisors. And it's interesting that the solution, at least part of the solution here, might be as much human as it is technological. One advisor is requiring more in-person signatures before things go forward. Others are requiring, the two-factor authentication, that sort of thing. Would you agree that the human factor here is going to be important?
Absolutely. And I'll give you an example. When we do wire transfers, there's been a lot of fraudulent activity in wire transfers, people buying houses and wiring monies to title companies, excuse me, and wiring monies to overseas and domestically to authenticate financial transactions. And it's been a big challenge for us, and we spend a lot of time talking about the security and how to authenticate clients. And you cannot initiate a wire, for example, without talking to the client if you know him and know his voice, his or her voice. If you don't, they have to come into the branch, they have to sign certain documents, they have to make sure that we know who they are and what they're doing with their wire transfers. And so it just has become a bigger and bigger issue. And every day we wrestle with this. We get fraudulent emails several times a week asking to initiate a wire transfer, when in fact it's not our clients. It's someone who has hacked in to their client's email account and sent us an email to authenticate a wire.
Yeah, and that's the good thing of having that human contact that we've been talking about.
Absolutely.
You know the voice of your client. If you suddenly got an email from me that said, hey, I want to invest a couple million dollars, do it now, and you know that if you call me, you can hear my voice, and that's the authenticity that I'm looking for.
Absolutely. And there's a concept in banking called Know Your Client, KYC. And that's very important, because if Steve is a client of mine and he's wiring to a foreign country that is out of his scope of things he normally does, we're going to call you and question you on what are you doing. And sometimes it's legitimate and sometimes it's not. But it goes back to having that relationship with the client, talking to the client, knowing what he's doing.
Part of the thing that scares me the most about all of this is with the information that the hackers got in this breach, this is going to be a lifetime of being on guard. And it seems like already people have sort of lost sight of this so soon after the hack. I mean, if we're going to have to be worried about this for the rest of our lives, we're going to have to be more vigilant.
Well, absolutely. And I know even Congress has gotten involved on certain parameters that they're requiring credit reporting agencies to follow going forward because of this hack. And I think the government's going to have to get involved in protecting the consumer when this is so prevalent in our society today.
One of the other scary stories I saw is one firm You talked about the emails that come in. One firm was out of, like, I think, 12 emails that were, it was a test, a drill, if you will, that 11 times the bank responded and fell victim to the phishing attack. That's a big deal to try to get on top of that.
It is, and we go through a lot of training classes as a bank. We're continually challenged to make sure we monitor our emails, to make sure we know where that email is coming. If we don't know the sender of the email, for example, we might not want to click on an attachment, because what we have found is the hackers typically get into a company or a corporation by the employee's emails, by planting a link, and then if you click on it, that gets them entrance into our corporate system. And so as employees, we're constantly trained and warned about being careful with your email account, making sure you know the sender. If you don't know the sender, maybe not click on the email and open it.
Lots of cloud computing is happening these days. I know it's big in banking. And while that might prevent sort of a physical attack, how risky still is cloud investment?
Well, the cloud situation is changing as we speak, and more firms are going to cloud computing. I think as data becomes more and more prevalent, banks are going to do the same and go to the cloud for software applications and things like that. And so, once again, it's spending a lot of money on technology to keep it upgraded, to keep it secure, and it's constantly changing. And it seems like every time we turn around, the hackers get smarter than we are, and then we have to implement certain things and changes. And the cloud is a perfect example of how do you protect that infrastructure, as we know it as the cloud, to prevent people from going in and capturing data.
Along the lines of that human interaction we were talking about earlier, there's now a nice scientific study that proves what we've been talking about in the past here in our thought leader conversations, that robo-advisors in wealth management, people really want that human interaction, regardless of how good these robos are.
Well, absolutely. And when you sit down with a financial advisor, you know, the advisor is going to know what your goals are, what your philosophy is on investing, for example, what your risk tolerance is. And a robot who's giving artificial intelligence and throwing out different product parameters or recommendations are not going to know the human side of it. And once again, especially in wealth management, it's all about the relationship, how we know you, what's going on in your life, and following a financial plan or goal-based financial planning to make sure that we're on track to your personal and professional goals, so to speak.
The study from MIT, the research on this suggested that part of this is trust. The people who are involved in this, the artificial intelligence, the robo-advisors, you had no idea where their motivation to do something was coming from. So if the robo-advisor was telling me invest in this, invest in that, my trust in that is questionable because I don't know what the motivation is.
Well, you've taken the human equation out of it. And once again, for certain products or some of the retail investing, the robo technology works, but when you get into wealth management, a true wealth management relationship, you can't take the human interaction out of it.
Some of these robots, too, are a couple of high-profile incidents recently where the robots' artificial intelligence have just sort of gone on their own and started doing things, made a couple of the experts step back and say, you know, maybe this isn't totally perfected yet.
Be a good sci-fi movie.
It would, but one has all my money. That's kind of scary when I think about that. Let's talk about the tax cut plan, because this is what's, you know, in the headlines.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of things about this for savings. One of them is the tax credits that people get to save for college education. College education savings accounts might go away. We're also talking about taking away the student loan interest deductions. For somebody who has wealth management, a program of wealth management or savings, how is this going to impact that?
Well, I don't think the final version is yet to be determined on this tax plan. I know that we had a discussion yesterday about the mortgage deduction, where it's been proposed that you only have up to $500,000 of mortgage deduction, and after that it becomes taxable. And that's a big issue, especially in wealth management, because as people tax plan, You know, they're planning on, you know, if they have $1 million mortgage, for example, they're planning on getting that whole tax deduction. And if that goes in half, that's going to affect their tax planning and their taxable bill at the end of the year. So these things have been proposed. How the final version is going to shake out, I don't think anybody knows. I know as we speak, Congress is now looking at the tax plan, and there's going to be changes to it. On the mortgage side, I know that there's been several caveats behind the standard $500,000 deductible that they're discussing. I know on the college tuition plans, they're taking away part of that deduction, but then they're increasing the personal deductions to possibly offset that. Mm-hmm. So I think the final version, nobody knows how it's going to shake out. There's a lot of things that are going to be proposed to offset some of the other things that are being proposed. So it remains to be seen how that's going to affect. But in wealth management, tax planning is very important. And we have tax planners on staff who work with our clients and make sure that they're doing all the tax advantage things they need to do to minimize their taxes as much as possible. And that's a big part of our wealth management discussions with clients.
The bottom line is it's hard enough to get people to save right now. We shouldn't make it any harder.
Absolutely. And people do certain things to take advantage of tax efficiencies. And when the tax laws change, they have to readjust and maybe do some other things to counteract the changes in tax planning. And that's going on as we speak right now. So it's very important for us to keep abreast of what's going on. We have tax planners on staff, and we spend a lot of time going through 400 pages of the mortgage interest deduction proposal and to say what really is going to happen here and what do our clients need to do to offset this proposed change.
Well, we'll definitely stay tuned, and by the time we talk again, chances are this will all be different.
Absolutely.
Doug, good seeing you.
Thank you, Steve. Pleasure to be here.
Doug Myers, Senior Vice President at Private Banking, Regional Manager, Associated Bank, in our Thought Leader conversation this morning. Remember, you can hear past conversations and meet all the thought leaders at associatedbank.com/thought leadership. You can also hear our past conversations at WGNradio.com on the opening bell page. And don't forget to follow Associated Bank on Twitter at Associated Biz.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. Chicago meal kit startup Home Chef is growing as its competitor Blue Apron struggles. Last year, Home Chef did roughly $100 million in revenue, and it's on track to roughly double that this year, the company says, and it's approaching 900 employees. Blue Apron has struggled as a public company and has been one of the worst performing IPOs in the U.S. this year. Caterpillar will no longer have a stake in fast-growing Chicago startup Uptake, as it's ending its investment in a 3-year-old predictive analytics company. Caterpillar, which invested in Uptake's $45 million round in 2015, said it's refocusing its areas of cooperation with the startup. And Chicago-based logistics startup Four Kites announced it has landed a big new customer in Kraft Heinz. The fifth-largest food and beverage company in the world said it will use Four Kites to predict shipment arrival times, track load temperatures, and analyze transportation operations. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Thursday edition of the broadcast. More than 30,000 members of the toy and game industry and consumers are all converging on Chicago. It is Chicago Toy and Game Week, otherwise known as Chi-Tag. We're happy to have with us this morning the founder of the event, Mary Cousin. Mary, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve. Thank you for having me here.
We've been billing this as talking about the business of toys and the business of play, so maybe that's where we can start. How big a business is this?
$208 billion.
That's a lot of toys. Is the industry healthy? Because we just saw the bankruptcy of Toys R Us. Is that any indication of the health of the industry?
No, not at all. In fact, sales have been up in the toy industry. And the toy industry actually encompasses many different forms, right? You've got your traditional, the physical, digital. Play is everywhere.
And one of the great things about the event that's starting today is that all of those different toys are on display, those different forms of play. Tell us about the week and the highlights.
Sure. So today we start with our inventor conferences. We have three tracks: professional inventor, new inventor, product acquisition executives. We have people coming in from 25 countries looking for new ideas. And something a lot of Chicagoans do not know is that Chicago has more toy and game inventors than anywhere else in the world. It started with a guy named Marvin Glass. It's somewhat of a colorful story. There's some screenplays and books being written about him right now. But then Friday night, we have our Taggy Awards, the Toy and Game Inventor of the Year Awards. We celebrate inventors, and they're growing now as celebrities because, you know, if you sell a million songs, you're on the cover of Rolling Stone, a million books, a New York bestseller list. But if you sell 60 million Jengas, nobody knows who you are. And it's the exact same creative process. It's a mystery why this is.
Yeah. What is the process of inventing a toy? I mean, I would imagine there's a level of creativity there that I can't even imagine. What goes into a good toy?
Wow, there is a lot of magic that goes into a good toy. You know, there's people that they do this their whole life, right? You've got your people that have one-offs, just like music. You know, somebody has a smash hit and that's it. But other people, they year after year, they just keep inventing, and toy and game inventors live longer, I think, than almost any other profession out there. They're, you know, they're creative. They keep inventing, pitching their whole lives, and you know, they're playful, creative people, and many of them don't just invent toys and games. They do housewares, medical devices. It's a really great industry.
So all of the people that will be rubbing shoulders at this convention, I would imagine they're going to be coming up not only with inventions, but they'll be looking at things. The buyers will be looking at toys they might want to have for the holiday seasons or for their stores. Is the timing of this around the holidays on purpose?
Absolutely. And in fact, the fact that it's on the same weekend as the Festival of Lights Parade is on purpose. We're actually moving towards a week of play and innovation, and we are working with the Chicago Public Library and Museum of Science and Industry and all. We'd like to build it out where the whole city plays, sort of like South by Southwest, but a week of play and innovation all around Chicago.
You mentioned earlier that people who invent toys or these creative types live long lives and they're healthy. What about people who play games? Is there any science? What's the science on how playing helps us to survive?
Oh, there's so much research on that now. In board games, there's something called SI, strategic intelligence, and that kids who play a lot of board games as kids, their IQs can be as higher at 16 points. And then also, you know, it's in play is where your neurons and all those things in your brain expand. And there's a lot of research to show, like in Finland, for example, they used to learn their alphabet and numbers in kindergarten. And now they play. And just that's it. They play and they score much higher later on in life. Michael Moore is doing a documentary on it.
I guess it might be good for you to know and good for all of us to know that, and I didn't realize this either, but the board games that I grew up with, you know, the Monopolies and all of those other board, they're still just as popular today, despite all of this virtual reality and electronic nature of toys, aren't they?
Oh, that category was up 26% last year. It is growing like crazy. I just read this morning in the news that that's supposed to be, once again, one of the biggest categories. People crave that face-to-face time. There's nothing wrong with digital play at all. I just think it's about balance, and people are craving that balance again. And yes, board games, very hot. It's the number one category in Kickstarter.
Yeah, it's one that I have friends and we have a game night and as adults, you know, grown adults. Aww. We still have game night. And so that's a big deal. And that kind of segues to my next question, Mary. What does the future hold for this industry? Are we going to see the trends continue where the board games of old are still just as popular, or are we all going to go into that virtual reality space?
Oh, I think it's all play. It's all good. No digital or tabletop play is going to go away. It's just going to keep increasing. I think as life becomes more crazy and more automated, that people will crave play more. One of our keynotes, Brent Bushnell, he's creating adult Chuck E. Cheese's because I think adults as well as kids are craving play experiences now. I think it's the next big thing out there. A lot of investors have told me this as well.
So an adult Chuck E. Cheese would be a place where you and I and our adult friends, we could actually go have dinner and play games ourselves.
Play games, giant games. Mm-hmm. I was just in his office. It's out in L.A. He's got robots that mix you drinks. And, oh, it's just incredible what he's doing.
Well, Mary, how can is this open to the public? Is the Chi-Tag open to the public? And how can we find more information and possibly attend?
Saturday and Sunday, it is open to the public. We welcome scouts, educators, military police as our guests. You just go to chitag.com, C-H-I like Chicago, T-A-G like toy and game. And there's a schedule of events. We've got a giant soggy doggy. We've got a U.S. National Rummy Cube Championship. The winner goes to Israel. A trip for two. It's incredible. Our Young Inventor Challenge kids come in from all over the country, Mexico. The kids that won last year, their game was licensed by Pressman and is sold out in many Targets across the country now. And they're local to Chicago. They're adorable, and they're donating 10% of their royalties to Lurie's Children's Hospital. It's really an amazing story of these girls.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, the name of their game is Ship of Treasures, and they're 10 years old.
Wow.
They're amazing kids.
Well, we wish you and Chi-Tag the best this week. Have a good conference, and thank you for being with us this morning here on The Opening Bell.
Well, thank you for having me.
All right, Mary Cousin, founder of Chi-Tag, the Chicago Toy and Game Week, which begins today and runs through the 19th at Chicago's Navy Pier. Again, open to the public on the weekend. You can find more information at chitag.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures up 50 this morning. NASDAQ futures are up 25. S&P futures are up 7. The latest on agriculture and commodities now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. An up and down market yesterday. Taking a look at grains, first of all, soybean futures firmed on seasonal strength, the Midwest harvest winding down, and a jump in soybean oil tied to an unexpected monthly drawdown in domestic supplies. Soybeans up higher as the National Oilseed Processors Association said its members crushed 164.2 million bushels of soybeans in October. That's the fifth highest monthly total on record. So at the end of the trading session, we saw soybeans up 8.5 cents a bushel. They ended the day at 9.76 1/4. Corn futures for December gained a penny at 3.38 1/2. And then the December wheat contract dropped 7.25 cents yesterday in the grain trade at the Chicago Board of Trade. Turning to livestock, Mercantile Exchange live cattle futures settled higher. Some short covering helping to recover some of the market's recent cash price-related losses. And a few investors adjusted positions before the USDA monthly cattle on feed report on Friday. The lean hog futures ended mostly weak. Some investors selling deferred months and buying December, partly because of its discount to the exchange's hog index for December 13th at 66.68. And a lawsuit filed yesterday on behalf of Roundup and some farmers has to do with the California ruling on a Monsanto product. I'm Orion Samuelson. Have a great day.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for this Thursday, it's November 16th. The Labor Department reports on the number of people who applied for unemployment benefits last week. The Federal Reserve releases its report on industrial production for October. On the housing side, the National Association of Home Builders has its market index for November. Freddie Mac reports on weekly mortgage rates. Best Buy, Walmart, Gap, and Viacom, among big companies, reporting quarterly earnings today.